Acts chapter 7, verse number 58 says, "Then they dragged him," talking about Stephen, "out of the city and began to stone him. And the witnesses laid their coats at the feet of a young man named Saul. While they were stoning Stephen, he prayed, 'Lord Jesus, receive my spirit.' Then he knelt down and cried out in a loud voice, 'Lord, do not hold this sin against them.' And when he said this, he died. And Saul approved of this." He approved of their killing him. That day, a severe persecution began against the church in Jerusalem, and all except the apostles were scattered throughout the countryside of Judea and Samaria. And devout men buried Stephen and made loud lamentations over him. But Saul was ravaging the church by entering house after house, dragging off both men and women. He committed them to prison." Many of us in here are fortunate enough to own a vehicle or lease a vehicle, and we have the blessing of being able to drive. Unfortunately, we are able to get to work or school or to the mall using the hundreds and thousands of roads and bridges and tunnels and bypasses. Unfortunately, roads, bridges, tunnels, and bypasses, they break down, they corrode, and they need to be repaired or replaced or refurbished. What does that mean? Well, that means construction. That means traffic jams. That means having to go down to one lane on a four-lane highway. That means people demonstrating that they have absolutely no clue what merge means. It means detours and changing travel patterns and having to leave earlier from work. Or leaving earlier for work. You ever get the feeling that construction just seems to be just like never ending? There's always construction. There are always orange barrels. There's always these cones. There are always trucks and flashing lights and flaggers. This is never a time when there's no construction. There's always construction. Just when you think you'll never see another orange barrel, you get word that another project is underway or it's in planning stages. In the state of Ohio, in 2018, there are over 1,000 road and bridge construction projects. These projects cost a little over $2.3 billion. Now, last year in 2017, the same numbers, over 1,000 projects and over $2.3 billion. And I'm guessing that in 2019, there's going to be over 1,000 projects and $2.3 billion. That means we just need to get used to orange barrels and cones and delays and detour signs on our way to work and school and to the mall, our other destination. Roadways will always be under construction. Always under construction. Now, the same could be said about our lives as we consider our journey with God. It seems that like our lives are always under construction. Those who are in a relationship with God will encounter a life full of repairs and rebuilds and restoration projects. I believe it is a truthful statement that people are always under construction. For the next few weeks, I want us to look at a few characters who underwent some type of construction. Perhaps as we look at their lives, we will learn something about our own lives and how we are under construction. When we encounter construction, we are likely to see detour signs. We're headed towards our destination and the fastest route or the best route where we're driving it. It just won't work out because of construction. And so we encounter this. We encounter a detour sign. Detours will mean taking a route that might be unfamiliar. It might mean taking longer to get to our destination. It will mean your direction is in the hands of the one who created the detour. And in terms of a life being under the construction of God, there was a man by the name of Saul who had to take one of the most dramatic detours in history. Church, in short, Saul was a rough dude. And we are introduced to Saul as he has become a prominent figure in the effort to silence and destroy a new group of Jesus followers, the church. I just read a story about Saul's presence at the execution of Stephen. Stephen was killed for preaching about Jesus, and Saul was there and gave his approval. Saul had position and he had power. He had what we call the juice. And those who wanted to persecute the church and make it hard for the church to exist went to Saul for his approval. And the great persecution in the early church was led by Saul. Saul was adamant about his viewpoint. As a committed Jew, he believed it was his God-given responsibility to put a stop to this movement of Christ followers. Saul was a terrorist, church. His religious views led him to terrorize and murder men and women because of their beliefs and because their beliefs didn't match his beliefs. Acts chapter 8, verse number 3, Saul was ravaging the church by entering house after house, dragging off both men and women as he committed them to prison. Do you see that? That's terror. Saul was a terrorist. Sadly, this weekend marks the one-year anniversary of that horrible rally that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia. White nationalists, white supremacists entered the city to espouse their disgusting and racist and destructive views. And a counter-protester, a woman by the name of Heather, was murdered as one of these deranged individuals just took a vehicle and just ran over this young lady. Attending this rally was a man by the name of Ken Parker. He was former member of the Navy. He left the Navy and found himself in a bad way, and so he joined some white supremacist groups. He was in Jacksonville, Florida. He was the Grand Dragon of the KKK. He was the leader. He had one of the special robes. And he was at this rally, yelling white power and screaming out sentiments that seemingly meant death to those who were brown and not white. And my stomach turns when I see members of these hate groups and the poison that they spew. It makes me sick. Anybody here with me? It makes me sick when I see that stuff. Saul was that guy. It's hard for us to see that because we're talking about Bible characters, but Saul was that guy. Now fast forward in the Acts story, and we meet Saul again on his way to Syria. He was on the road to the capital city of Damascus, where there were some church folks there. There were some Jesus followers there. And Saul was on his way because he wanted to do something about this way, these Jesus followers. He was going to do something about it. He was about to go and spew some hate and terrorize some folks and throw them in prison and perhaps have them executed because of their belief in Jesus. Acts chapter 9, verses 1 says, meanwhile, Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked for letters to the synagogues at Damascus so that if he found any who belonged to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Saul was prepared to bring more terror to anyone who claimed to be a part of the way. And we should note that Saul thought he was doing what was necessary in pursuit of God. He was on a route that was familiar to him. This was what he knew, kind of like that route to work. You know, you have that route to work that you know the exact amount of time it takes you to get to work. You know how long it's going to take. You know all the traffic lights. You even know where the little metal things in the ground are, where you can make sure you stop there so that the light changes when you get there. You have it memorized. You know how many songs you can play or how much music you can listen to before you get to work. You know the distance you're away from work, that you can't play that one song because you're not going to be able to finish it before you get to work. Or you know that when you get to work, you're going to have to sit in the car for a few extra minutes to listen. You know that route. It's kind of like being on a route that you know. You could drive it with your eyes closed. We know all the things about it. We know what it's all about. Paul was on a route that he knew about. He was headed to Damascus. And what he knew was, I'm going to make it hard for the way to exist. That's what I know. That's what is familiar to us. But then comes that one day when we see the detour sign. And on the road to Damascus, Saul encounters a massive detour sign. On the road, Saul encounters Jesus Christ himself. Reading in verse number 3 of chapter 9, it says, "Now as he was going along and approaching Damascus, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, 'Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?' 'Who are you, Lord?' Saul asked. The reply came, 'I am Jesus, who you are persecuting. But get up and enter the city, and you will be told what to do.'" A detour sign. If I have ever seen a detour sign, this was a detour. Here, Saul encounters the Lord, and it would forever change his direction, his route, and his destiny. His destination wasn't necessarily changed because, again, he was on a route towards God. He thought that his route towards God would be one that would involve killing people and putting people in jail and being an impedance to the way. So his destination wasn't necessarily changed. His destination would still end with Jehovah as the location. The Lord comes in and tells Saul, "You are a prime candidate for some construction." And so the story of Saul is one where he is headed to Damascus, and the Lord still directs him to go to Damascus, and he goes to Damascus. And while he's in Damascus, he's blinded by this light. And so he's in Damascus, and he's blind, and he's afraid, and he doesn't know what's going on. But God has somehow gotten his attention, and he says, "I want you to go to Damascus, and I'm going to tell you what to do." And so Paul says, "Okay, I'll do what you have to do." It was a detour sign. He's going somewhere, and he gets to Damascus, and God calls his guy by the name of Ananias, and Ananias comes in the scene and in the story of Saul, and God comes to Ananias and says, "Hey, listen, I have something for you to do. I need you to go to this house. There's going to be this guy there by the name of Saul, and Saul is praying right now, and he's getting a vision right now. Even though he's blind, he's getting a vision of someone named Ananias who's going to come to him and going to restore his sight, and I want you to go to him, and I want you to restore his sight, and I want you to teach him. I want you to tell him about Jesus." And I said, "Well, who me? You want me to go to this guy named Saul? Now listen, God, I've heard about this guy named Saul. He's a terrorist. He's doing some despicable things. He's thrown some of my brothers and sisters I know from way back in the day. He's thrown them in prison. Some of them have been executed. You want me to go to him?" God says, "Yes, I want you to go to him." And Ananias obeys. He goes. He walks in the door, surely fearful, surely upset. What if God called you to go to the most despicable terrorist in the world right now? He said, "I have called you to go to him, and I want you to teach." What if he told you to go to the leader of Boko Haram, the leader of Al-Qaeda, leader of the Taliban? What if he called you to go to the most? I want you to picture what's going on in this story. Sometimes we read these stories with such sanitized understanding and sanitized glasses. I want you to understand that Ananias was called to go to a terrorist. But Ananias was faithful to God. He went to this terrorist, Saul. He healed him. He touched him. The followers of Damascus teach Saul, and then Saul, who was once a persecutor, a terrorist, he became a follower of Jesus. He goes on to preach. He was baptized into Jesus Christ, the text says. Chapter 9, verse number 22, after people have been listening to this guy by the name of Saul, verse number 21 says, all who heard him were amazed and said, is not this the man who made havoc in Jerusalem among those who invoked this name? And has he not come here for the purpose of bringing them bound before the chief priests? Saul became increasingly more powerful and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus by proving that Jesus was the Messiah. That's an interesting line there. He proved that Jesus was the Messiah. And I would say one of the ways that he proved that Jesus was the Messiah was by his preaching and his teaching and sharing all the things about Jesus. But I think one of the most profound ways that he showed that Jesus was the Messiah is because people saw change. They saw that someone came into an encounter with Jesus. Saul the persecutor is now Saul the preacher. And it confused some folks. Like, this can't be the same person. You ever meet somebody that you knew from way, way, way back in the day, and then you run into them again? I remember in college, I had a guy who was, he was a member of the basketball team, guy by the name of Lonnie. And Lonnie was on the basketball team, and man, he was a rough dude. He was a rough dude. In the dorm, we'd walk around in the male dorm with our shirts off. I didn't do it because I didn't want to embarrass anybody. But people wanted my one pack. But Lonnie would walk around with his shirt off, and he was very cut and very muscular, and he had several stab wounds. He grew up in Flint, Michigan. He was a rough dude. But I befriended Lonnie, and Lonnie was a nice guy, and I even invited him to come to church with me a couple times. He'd come to church with me a couple times. Nice fellow. He could tell he was rough. Then he left. He was there for the fall semester, and he left, and I didn't see him. Then fast forward 2 years, my wife and I were living in Flint. I'm working at a church there, and I'm walking into the Christian bookstore there, and as I'm opening the door, I see Lonnie coming out the Christian bookstore. Like, huh? And I'm like, Lonnie? He's like, Dion, man, what's up, man? We hugging each other, and oh, yeah. And he's telling me about his life, and telling me, he thanked me. He said, man, I just want to thank you, man. Like, man, we were at college, man, a couple of times you invited me to church, and man, I left school, and man, I met the Lord, and man, now I'm part of a really good church, and man, I'm part of the drama team, and I'm writing some ministries, and today, man, several years later, Lonnie is part of like a Christian film company. He's making Christian films and doing all these things. But you ever run into somebody that you see, like when you first meet them, they're rough, but then they meet Jesus, and then they you're like, whoa. Maybe you just look in the mirror. Some of you know your life before Jesus, and you see your life now. You start thinking back to what you used to be and what you used to look like, but then Jesus took over your story, and then there's a difference. Maybe the hardest part in preaching this sermon is not referring to Saul by his other name. Saul is the Apostle Paul. Paul is Saul. Saul is Paul. And we know Paul as the author and composer of most of our New Testament Bible. We know Paul as the wise and gifted preacher and teacher who traveled all over the ancient world sharing the gospel message of Jesus. We don't see Paul as Saul the terrorist. We see Paul as the model Jesus follower. But the truth remains, had it not been for a detour in Saul's life, there is no Paul the Apostle. There is no letter to the Romans or Corinthians or Ephesians or Colossians or Philippians or to Timothy or Titus or to the Romans. Well, Paul was under construction, and he confessed that fact several times throughout his writings. He knew that he was someone that God was continually working on. Here are some of Paul's words. I like this passage from 1 Timothy from the Message. When Paul writes this, he says, "Here's a word you can take to heart and depend on. Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners. I'm proof. Public sinner number one of someone who could never have made it apart from sheer mercy. And now he shows me off. Evidence of his endless patience to those who are right on the edge of trusting him forever." He writes to the Philippian church in chapter 3. He says, "I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I have made it, but I am well on my way, reaching out for Christ who has so wondrously reached out for me. Friends, don't get me wrong. By no means do I count myself an expert in all of this, but I've got my eye on the goal where God is beckoning us onward to Jesus. I'm off and running. I'm not turning back." In both passages, Paul indicates that he is a work in progress. In some of his translations, he says, "Jesus came to save sinners, of which I am the chief." I am. That's currently. That's not past. That means that I am still in a state where I'm a knucklehead, but God is still working on me. In Philippians, it's not that I have obtained the goal, but I'm reaching towards that goal. God is still working on me because I'm a work in progress. I am under construction. As long as I am alive, God will always be working on us. It's like the roads in Ohio. They will always be under construction. Our lives, our journey with God is one that will always be under construction. One of the greatest truths that we could say about ourselves is that we are works in progress. God is still working on us. We are under construction. I still have some attitudes that I need to get rid of, church. I still have some habits that I need to get rid of, church. I still need some perspectives reshaped. If you catch me on a bad day, you might get the worst of me because I am under construction. Some of us are still rough, but we are unfinished projects and we're under construction. For some of us, our faith story has been a 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old project. For some of us, the project started a few years ago. For some of us, it's just the beginning. No matter who you are under construction. Even Ken Parker, the Grand Dragon of the KKK in Jacksonville, Florida. He's under construction. I wish we had an update of where Ken Parker is right now. In fact, we do have an update. Watch this.
For Ken Parker, this harmony didn't always exist. This time last year, he was immersed in hate. Ken joined the KKK in 2012.
Yeah. You would actually wear this when you all were burning crosses.
Yes, ma'am.
But still, he wanted more.
Klan wasn't hateful enough for me, so I decided to become a Nazi.
Which is why, when hundreds of white nationalists descended on Charlottesville 1 year ago, Ken was there.
All the things you could have picked to say, I want to be a part of this group, and I want this to be a part of my identity. Why whiteness?
I had gotten out of the Navy. It was really hard to get a job, and it's really easy to blame it on somebody else. You know, we have people with darker skin in our country, you know, taking my job.
But just 7 months after that rally, he bumped into a man who made an offer that would change his life.
He invited me and my fiance to go to church, and I was like, well, it's worth a shot.
That man was a black pastor. When
I say yes. I just asked Ken to share his testimony.
I need y'all here.
So you've got a 70-person congregation now. They're all black, and just three white people, including you.
Yes, ma'am.
They welcomed him in love.
I thought, you know, they would judge me, but no, everybody was, like, really friendly.
When we make it to heaven, heaven just not going to be one race.
What would you say to the people who you may have offended or hurt?
I want to say I'm sorry. I know I've spread hate and discontent. Probably made little kids scared to sleep in their own beds.
Hello, I'm with you always.
Now, Ken is still navigating uncharted waters into a wave.
Better than I did the last time I had a robe on.
Of love. God bless. Morgan Radford, NBC News, Jacksonville, Florida.
You can say amen to that. I love what the reporter said. The reporter said, Ken is still navigating uncharted waters. That's another way of saying Ken is under construction, right? Ken is a work in progress. We're all works in progress. There are detours in your life, paths that God is carving out for your life. And I know that they are unfamiliar. I know that sometimes these pathways are inconvenient. But I'm asking you to trust in the Lord, because he will take you to the right destination. I realize that when you take a detour, you are at the will of the person who designed the detour. You have to trust that they know what they are talking about when they rerouted. It might take you a little longer. It might take you to a few extra turns in your life. But God is faithful to continue working on you if you say yes. He's asking you to be his construction project. And so when you come to that detour, take it and don't turn back. And what you will discover is that there are some things that's going to take place during this construction project. You may find yourself driving over rough pavement. You may find yourself coming to some road close and stop. You may find yourself having to merge. You may find yourself at the behest of some construction workers. But after it's over, you'll be new. But even then, you'll still be a work in progress. Yeah, one of the things that I just have to share to people in my life that I encounter when I make mistakes, when I wrong them, when I do something wrong. I'm not saying that this just becomes an excuse to always run to, but it's just a truth that I'm so sorry. I'm just a work in progress. I'm still under construction, and if you would demonstrate some patience with me, I promise that I'm gonna take myself to God and say, God, I need you to work on this, because this is hurting other people. And I guarantee that is what Paul struggled with. If you haven't gone to go see the movie The Apostle Paul, it came out a few months ago. It's an average film, but there's some themes in this movie. And one of the things that keeps coming back in this film for Paul is him trying to reckon with all the things that he did in his past. Because Paul was responsible for a lot of deaths, church. He was responsible for a lot of deaths. And God had to continually work on him to help him to understand that he was forgiven. It's one of the things that we struggle with. We struggle with forgiveness because we're works in progress. Some of us, just the way that we treat people, man, we're works in progress. Some of us have a problem trusting other people because we're works in progress. Some of us are just so big-headed and arrogant because we're works in progress. We'll always be under construction. And the moment that I understand that you're under construction and you understand that I'm under construction is the minute we actually start to demonstrate grace towards one another. Does that make sense, church? We're a little, You know, we want people to change just like that because that's how it happened with us, right? The minute I said yes to Jesus is the minute, man, I had it all together, right? Yeah, for some people, it takes running into a black pastor and being part of a black church. That is one of the greatest stories. I tell you what, as much as there are stories that cause me to just really question humanity, it's stories like that help me to say, you know what, God is good. And God knows what he's doing. It may take a chance interaction with someone at one moment that really, but for some, it takes years. We're works in progress. There are some bridges in Ohio that all they have to do is just, zip, 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 bridge is fine. But there's some bridges in Ohio, they're going to have to blow up. It's going to be closed for a couple of years, and they're going to have to rebuild it. Not every bridge is the same. Not every road is the same. Not every tunnel is the same. Not every man, woman, or child is the same. Except this. We're all under construction. Amen? I'm praying right now that you will make a decision to follow Jesus. Saul had to make a decision to follow Jesus. And once he made that decision to follow Jesus, he says, you know what? No turning back. There'll be some twists, there'll be some turns, there'll be some uneasiness, but no turning back. So I'm asking each and every one of you, wherever you're at in your journey with God, to make a decision to follow Jesus. So we're going to sing a song in just a second. I have decided to follow Jesus. I've decided to follow Jesus, and no turning back. For some of you, it means right now just kind of restarting and reigniting your faith that maybe for whatever reason it's just kind of lost. It's you know, you've gotten turned in a detour and you didn't like where you were going and you said, I'm gonna make this turn, and man, you're just lost and you're out there. I'm saying, you know what? Make a decision to get back on that path that God is taking you on. Or maybe you have never taken that step of faith and journey towards God. And right now is the moment you're saying, okay, this is my moment. This is the detour sign. This is where Saul was when he was on the road to Damascus. And Jesus says, follow me. And this is the moment where I said, I believe you, Jesus. And this is the moment where I says, I want to take a faith. I want to take a step out in faith. I want to place my trust in you. I want to be initiated. I want to be covered by you. I want to be baptized. I want to be a faithful, committed follower of Jesus. No turning back. Maybe this is your moment. Say, yes, I will follow you. As we sing this song, if you want to make a commitment to Christ, I want to ask you to make that commitment now. Let's stand. Let's sing.